Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Amron's Podcast, episode 132. It's Tuesday, December 9th, 2008. This is my second podcast so far in December, Archer, and today's episode is all about the situation in Canada. Now, I mentioned it in my last episode, and I said that I hope to have Mark from Slap Upside the Head join me to talk about it in more detail, and we were able to arrange to speak this morning, and so that's what today's episode is. And in my next episode, later this week, I'll go over comments and all that sort of stuff, but for right now, here's Mark. Well, joining me now is Mark from Slap Upside the Head, and we're going to talk about what's going on in Canada. Welcome back, Mark.
Hello.
Well, last time you were on, we talked about the elections in Canada and how Stephen Harper had formed a minority government and sort of what that meant and everything. But things have changed a bit since we last talked.
Yeah, a little.
Got a bit weird. Why don't you start by saying what is going on?
Okay, well... Right now, Parliament has been completely suspended for nearly 2 months, which is highly, highly unusual, especially amidst an economic crisis. And I honestly don't think this has happened in my lifetime before, but Parliament, basically, it still exists. It hasn't been dissolved. There isn't going to be an election, but nothing is happening in Parliament. All the MPs are not allowed to go in and debate things. And the reason this is happening is because there was talk of forming a coalition government, which this is something that doesn't exist in the States. Here we have multiple parties, and Canadians don't actually vote for a prime minister or even a government. We vote for a parliament. And the party that won the most seats in parliament in the last election was a conservative party. So they had formed what was called a minority government, which means the government has the most number of seats of any other party, but still doesn't have a majority of the seats in the House. So what can happen is all the opposition parties could form a coalition and then form the government. This probably sounds very complicated, and it is, but that's how things work.
Not too bad.
But what happened is the opposition parties agreed to form a coalition, or at least the NDP and the Liberal Party did. The Bloc Québécois decided to support the coalition, and they would have defeated the Conservative government in the next vote of non-confidence, which would have come up very, very quickly. So to avoid this and avoid having the government fall, Stephen Harper has suspended Parliament. So right now we don't have a government, and it's not going to come back until about January. It's really, really kind of bizarre.
Yes, and I'm not actually all that aware of this happening typically in parliamentary systems, except when somebody is seizing power in a coup of some sort and essentially making themselves dictator, which, not coincidentally, is what quite a number of people have been saying Stephen Harper has done. Now, I suppose that gets down to semantics, and that gets down to whether you support Stephen Harper or not, but it is certainly an anti-democratic move to suspend Parliament because you knew you were going to lose a confidence vote.
For sure. No, this is something that, the people have already elected a Parliament, and the Conservatives do not have the majority of that Parliament. So for the Prime Minister to come and suspend Parliament is extremely undemocratic. But that's not necessarily how it's being seen here. It's getting kind of even more bizarre as things go on.
Well, I've seen that part of the rhetoric that he's been using is that Harper, has been talking about how the opposition parties are using backroom deals to try to basically subvert democracy and all of this sort of thing, which I thought was a bit weird because, as you said, the Conservatives didn't get a majority of the votes overall. They're minority in the parliament, so purely on numbers alone, the opposition parties are the majority, and there's no reason why they shouldn't form a government if they want to. But
this is how our constitution works. That's how it's allowed. The opposition parties are allowed to form a coalition. The really weird thing about all this, I guess, rhetoric and rhetoric that's coming out, mostly from the conservative side, I think maybe some of the context of what's happening in Canada has to be taken into. A lot of our media comes from the United States. We get a lot of U.S. TV channels. It's just whatever makes news in the U.S. is always news in Canada as well. There's a border there, but in fact, North America is kind of all a weird mishmash, especially in Canada, where it's really heavily influenced by what's going on in the U.S. And strangely, it doesn't work in the opposite direction.
Funny that.
But, yeah, but because of that, to be honest, I don't think a lot of Canadians fully understand how our parliamentary system works. Because a lot of the talk that's coming out of the conservative side of things are just outright lying, really, about how Parliament works. They're calling this a coup that the opposition is doing, that they're trying to overturn the results of the last election, that the Canadian people elected Stephen Harper. And all of that is wrong. You know, this is something that is constitutionally allowed. The election results are not being overturned. The Parliament is exactly in the same form after a coalition government as before. And the only people that voted for Stephen Harper are the people that live in his riding, and they voted for him as a local member of Parliament, not as Prime Minister. But, you know, this is something... Stephen Harper is very, very good somehow at manipulating the media. Even during his election campaign, I remember watching some of the ads and thinking they were kind of unusual. Parties like to promote their leaders a lot, so they will often say, vote for... I remember from the previous Liberal government saying, vote for Paul Martin's team, or this year it was Stéphane Dion's team. But from Stephen Harper's ads, they had a bunch of, they're supposed to be ordinary Canadians standing by their, you know, cars or farm equipment or whatever. And one of them said, I'm voting for Stephen Harper. And I thought that was a really, really unusual thing to put in an ad, because... again, unless she lives in his riding, she's not voting for Stephen Harper. It was just a really odd thing for a party to say, as opposed to what the traditional thing was, to vote for someone's team. So really, from the start, Stephen Harper has been promoting this as he's basically a president, and people vote for him, and they give his government a mandate, and this is how he advertises it, when in reality, that's not what's happening at all. So what we see now is a very divided public here, where there are people that are saying that this is a coup d'etat, and they're trying to overturn the results of the election, and then other people that are saying, no, wait a minute, this is not the States, this is how our parliamentary system works, this is democratic, and it's completely divided. It's very, very bizarre to watch.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you say about Harper essentially running a presidential-style campaign, because we've been seeing that here in New Zealand in recent election cycles as well, where the leaders of the main parties have been promoting themselves. And they talk about the parties, of course, but they don't... It is a very U.S.-style election style, I guess you'd say, that we've been seeing. And I think that might be creeping into other Westminster-style parliamentary systems as well. But you're right, it's absolutely absurd to be talking about that, because... the only people who do vote for the prime minister are the people in that particular electorate.
But they don't vote for them as prime minister either. In fact, there had been times in Canada where the prime minister wasn't even a member of parliament. They were a senator. I think that happened twice. So really, no one votes for the prime minister. Yeah. Even people within their own parties, when they vote for someone, they vote as a party leader. No one votes for prime minister. It's just a really odd thing to say.
Yeah, well, even in proportional systems like New Zealand or Australia, when you're voting for the party, you're still not even necessarily voting for the prime minister, certainly not directly anyway. You're voting for the party, which is led by whoever the leader of the day is. So it strikes me as really inappropriate for a parliamentary system, for the leader to be running a presidential-style campaign. But maybe Stephen Harper's actions are a bit more indicative of how he sees himself, if he thinks that he can and suspend Parliament. But here's something I don't get. Maybe I'm just not seeing it. But one of the things we haven't talked about is one of the specific issues that triggered the revolt was the Conservative Party's plans to remove the funding for the other parties. And maybe you could talk about that a bit in a minute. But here's the thing. All the other parties were really angry with Stephen Harper, and the Conservatives led them to form this coalition. What on earth makes Harper think that they're going to be any less angry when he has basically told them to rack off for 6 weeks or whatever? I mean, aren't they going to be every bit as angry when they go back?
I think so. I think really what he's trying to do, and this is just, you know, he's panicking. He would have lost Parliament if it hadn't been suspended. So this was his only option to survive, really. And I think what he's hoping will happen is that over the next few months, they will make the world's most fantastic budget that has ever, you know, graced our planet, and the opposition parties wouldn't possibly be able to vote against it, and they will all hail, you know, the Conservative Party for their magnificent budget. That probably won't happen, especially after the way Stephen Harper is behaving. If even if he does come up with a budget that all the opposition parties can agree on, I still don't think Harper would have regained confidence of the House. But, you know, like I said, this is his last ditch attempt to hold on to power. So,
Well, that's how it's being portrayed in this part of the world. As a matter of fact, yesterday I was watching Sky News Australia, and the crawler at the bottom of the screen was talking about Stephen Harper in a last ditch attempt to hold on to power. It wasn't even talking about there's no subtlety in what they were putting across the bottom of the screen. Now, I didn't see any of their extended coverage, assuming there was some. But that was sort of the angle that they were taking. And I've seen that in other parts of the media here in New Zealand as well. And it is getting coverage in various places. It was mentioned in the Democracy Now! Broadcast in the U.S., which is carried mostly on independent stations, and also it's available as a podcast. So I think the whole thing is getting a bit wider coverage than perhaps even Stephen Harper would like, especially because he can't control it. Has any of this played out in the Quebec elections?
You know, people are suspecting it might. I should mention there is an election going on here. A little known fact about Canada is we do vote every 3 weeks. I'm so sick of voting. This is the second provincial election here in Quebec in the past 2 years. So it's only been a little over a year since the last one, and I'm already voting again. But one thing to understand about Quebec is its official language is French, and it's the only Canadian province that only has French as its official language. And there's obviously a huge French population here. I don't want to go into all of Canada's history, but they settled here. I really like it. This is where I live. I'm trying my best to learn French. And actually, part of my ancestry is from here as well. But because the culture is so different, they often find themselves here, or ourselves, I guess I'm part of it now. We often find ourselves kind of clashing with what the rest of Canada wants. So there is a movement to separate from Canada here, which I don't personally agree with. I can kind of understand where people are coming from, but I honestly don't believe that separation would ever be the answer to it. But this sentiment has been here for a long time, and there had been referendums in the past to try and separate. And the last one, which was in 1995, just barely was defeated. It was like a 50.1% against separation to 49.9%, like completely divided. But one of the opposition parties in federal politics is the Bloc Québécois, which largely is in favor of Quebec separation. Now, federally, I don't believe they really have any power to do that, but it's, you know, just meant as people here having some kind of voice to express that. So this party is not officially part of the coalition, but they would have to support the NDP Liberal coalition. So what Stephen Harper has been doing is saying that this is a separatist coalition, and that's a phrase he's been using a lot. That's the separatist coalition is trying to overturn the results of the last election, and, you know, it's all the same stuff that he keeps saying over and over again. It's starting to get kind of tiring, especially since it's so extreme. Separation is not at all on the coalition's platform, and the Bloc isn't even part of the coalition formally. But what all this talk about a separatist coalition has done here in Quebec is kind of reignited the anger at Ottawa in people that are separatist. So part of that might affect the provincial elections here, because the provincial separatist party here, which is the Parti Québécois, they do have power to separate as a provincial government, so if they were to form. If you talk to the voters on the street today, I don't think any of them would say that what's happening in Ottawa right now is going to affect their votes in Quebec. But, you know, it must a little, so it's hard to say. Until just now, there hasn't been any talk, really, of separation. Even the Parti Québécois in the last provincial election was kind of musing about it and ended up losing a ton of support to a right-wing party called the ADQ, which is highly unusual for Quebec. People here are not right-leaning at all. Mm. But now that the Parti Québécois kind of backed away from the separation stance again, the ADQ has lost a lot of support, and there might actually be a liberal majority in the province after tonight. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. Of course, we started out talking about the coup d'état, and who's doing the coup sort of depends on your perspective, I suppose.
Yeah.
But as I understand it, what is happening next is that Parliament will reconvene on the 26th of January, I think it is, and that's when the budget is to be presented. But will the opposition parties be able to put through a motion of no confidence then, or will they have to just vote down the budget and cut off supply to the government?
I think they would have to vote down the budget, which all of the opposition parties have said they are willing to do at this point. So what would happen then, I believe, is what will probably happen, I'm trying to predict into the future here, is Stephen Harper would go to the Governor General and plead for an election, which, again, that would be his kind of last-ditch attempt. But then the opposing parties would go to the Governor General and propose a coalition government. And the Governor General would have to choose one, usually based on precedent, or just, she's surrounded by constitutional experts, so generally, she would have to make whatever the most reasonable response would be. But that's probably what's going to happen, and I do think that she would let the coalition government happen. I was a little surprised that she allowed Stephen Harper to prorogue Parliament, because, again, this is something, the way that Canada works is the Prime Minister, on paper, really doesn't have any power. The most powerful person in Canada is the Queen. Mm. Elizabeth II, and her representative is the Governor General, who passes all the laws by giving royal assent to them. And technically, she could rule Canada with an iron fist, but really, in reality, it's kind of more of a symbolic position. Mm. But every now and then, there's a situation where the Governor General makes a decision on her own that will affect what's going on here in Canada. And this was one of those cases where Stephen Harper wanted to suspend Parliament just so he doesn't have his government defeated. And so he went and asked the Governor General to do that, and she agreed. Now, it's probably not what I would have done, but to be honest, I'm not angry at the Governor General. I'm completely angry at Stephen Harper. Mm. Because in reality, for a Governor General to deny the request of a sitting Prime Minister, especially when on paper, formally, they passed the last confidence motion, which means they still had confidence in Parliament, that would have been really unusual. So I really don't think she had a choice, and all of the blame, I believe, should be on Stephen Harper for approaching her to do this.
Yeah.
Now, also, by proroguing Parliament, I think she has set herself up in a really good position to deny his request for an election when the government falls in January, because she can say, well, I prorogued Parliament. You had almost 2 months to try and regain confidence of the House. They still don't have confidence. We just had an election not that long ago. I think it's time to let the opposition parties form government.
Yeah, and what happens in New Zealand's parliament, and I presume it's probably similar in Canada, is that if a government does fall, the first thing that the Governor General will do is to consult Parliament to see if anybody else has the numbers to form a government. If they do, then they're given a chance to do it. And if they can, then they're away. But if they can't, then they have to go back to the people. And I presume that there would be a situation similar to that where when Harper's government does fall, that she would say to the opposition parties, do you have the numbers to form government? And if they can establish that they do, then she would probably give them a go, I would think, just based on what happens in most Westminster-style systems.
Yeah. Well, that's how it's set up to be, and that's definitely how it should work. I have to say, in Canada, we have kind of a strange parliamentary system because it is first past the post. It's actually very unusual to get a minority government or a situation in which a coalition could form. Majority governments are by far the most common outcome of our elections, which I don't like. I do think that having as many parties as possible with some sort of system of proportional representation is the way to go. And so I really like coalition governments because there isn't too much precedent. I mean, there have been coalition governments here in the past, but I believe they were all like in the, I don't even remember, 1800s or it's a long time ago.
Mm.
So this is something that doesn't often happen here, and I think that's also where some of this rhetoric is coming from.
Yeah, and it was very similar for New Zealand before adopting proportional representation. It was always majority rule. There were coalitions on paper during wartime, but they weren't real coalitions because there was always still one party that was running everything. I mean, that was, on paper anyway, had the majority of the House. And so they would be forming government anyway. Nowadays, of course, because we have proportional representation, we're pretty much guaranteed that whoever is leading government will actually not have a majority. This time we're reasonably close because the ruling National Party has 58 seats out of 122, but it still doesn't have a majority, and it had to do deals with minor parties for confidence and supply, which, and I'm with you, I think that coalitions are a really good thing because, and have to do deals with minor parties because it keeps whoever the major party is, keeps them from dictating and pushing through what might be a more radical agenda. In our case, the Conservative National Party has moved a bit to the center since the last election. But, I mean, if I were living in Canada, and perhaps I shouldn't say, but if I were living in Canada, I don't think I would want to have an unfettered Conservative Party running the show. Because I would.
Yeah, no. Obviously, nor do Canadians. We did not vote in as a majority for 2 elections in a row. Well, 3, really, because he was even the party leader when during Paul Martin's Liberal minority government. Hmm. So, yeah, no, it would be unfortunate if they got a majority, because the majority of Canadians, when you talk about popular votes and proportional representation, do not support a majority Conservative government.
Mm. Now, one thing I did wonder about as well is that after the last elections, the leader of the Liberal Party was saying that he was stepping down. And what I understood would happen is that if the coalition did come to power, that he would be the caretaker prime minister until the new leader of the Liberal Party. What is all that about?
Yeah, well, I have to say the Liberal Party is not in very good shape, and it's really unfortunate. Some brief history. During the Chrétien years, which he was prime minister for a very long time here, I believe 13 years, there was a sponsorship program, or a scandal, as people called it, where the Liberal Party ended up using taxpayer money, which they gave to Liberal-friendly organizations for basically no work. So it was a scandal, and it's brought down the government. Now, I think very few people really understand what's going on, but Conservatives like to, you know, say that Liberals have no moral authority and whatnot. It's actually kind of a complicated situation. It's unfortunate that it happened, but since then they've pretty much lost power. First they got a minority government, and then now they're the opposition. After Paul Martin lost his Liberal minority government, he stepped down, which means we needed a new Liberal leader, and because Jean Chrétien retired before Paul Martin, so that's why he wasn't the party leader then. But when Paul Martin stepped down, they needed a new leader, and the party was already pretty battered. And they picked what I think was, on paper, a very good one. And I still really like Stéphane Dion. It's really unfortunate that he's been the target of so many attacks. People always complain that there are no honest politicians, that they're all evil cutthroats. And here you have a genuinely smart, nice guy with, I think, good policies, but, you know, he's not at all prime minister, I guess, material in that sense, because he's not cutthroat. You know, so that's unfortunate. He was painted as a weak leader from the day he was elected. The Conservatives ran ads saying that Stéphane Dion is not a leader. And they just drilled that message into the heads of all Canadians through ads, even though it wasn't an election year or an election time. And that image stuck. And so Stéphane Dion lost even more seats in the last election. And the Liberal Party basically booted him out, even though I think he still wanted to be the leader. Now, after they booted him out and announced the, whatever you call it, convention. I don't know, is there a name for that when you elect a new leader?
I don't know.
There must be.
We just call it a caucus, but we have a party conference, we call it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, after it was announced that a new leader would be chosen, this is when all this coalition talk had started. So basically they decided that Stéphane Dion would be the leader of the coalition until the new Liberal leader was chosen. But Canadians, still largely influenced by this whole media perception that Stéphane Dion is not a leader, I think maybe that's where some of the people siding with the Conservatives is coming from.
Okay.
So as of today, he announced that he's stepping down early, and I believe it hasn't been decided yet, but I believe Michael Ignatieff is going to be an interim leader until a new Liberal leader is chosen.
Okay.
It's, again, the Liberal Party is just in terrible shape, and I think this is another reason that public support is so divided instead of simply being on side of, I would say, the constitutional and democratic way of thinking about this whole situation.
Well, it sounds like they need to do a bit of house cleaning then.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this whole situation, if it sounds like I'm rambling on and that this is complicated, it's because this is complicated. This is a very unusual situation up here.
Well, I do have to say that the party leadership business with New Zealand parties is a lot simpler. What happens is that the parliamentary caucus meets and they select their leader among themselves, and the larger party has no say in it. The larger party determines who's the party president, you know, who runs the party, and things like that, the officers of the party. But they don't have any direct input into who will be the party leader. And the members of parliament who select their leader do so partly based on who they think is best positioned to lead them to victory in the next election, whenever that is. In the case of New Zealand, when the election results were announced, the prime minister of the day, Helen Clark, announced on election night that she was stepping down as leader. And the following week, the party elected a new leader and deputy leader. And I personally don't think they're going to be there at the next election, but that's, we'll see. But basically, I'm just saying that it's really a simple and straightforward thing. The caucus meets, they elect a new leader, and then they carry on. And I suppose it's a bit hard to get one's head around how the Canadian system works if you're not in it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, that's not at all how it works here. Maybe it should be, though, because here, electing a new party leader is a costly process. It does involve a vote, which I believe any card-carrying member of the party can vote. And I think it differs from party to party, too. So, you know, not being an official member of any political party, I can't really say how the process works. I've never been involved in it. But, yeah, no, it takes a lot longer than just a week or two. And it is, I believe, any card-carrying Liberal or Conservative or whatever party member, they can vote.
Mm. Yeah, in New Zealand, the only real advantage of being a party member is that you can have a voice in the selection process for your local MP when, you know, when that person is selected for your electorate, or riding, as you would call it. Oh, and I suppose that you also have some input into the party manifesto, which is like a platform in American politics. Because the annual conference in election years draws up that, basically what the party is going to attend to if it is in government in the coming year, you know, that sort of thing. But there aren't that many people who are members of parties. Even the two major parties, the Labour Party and the National Party, have very few members.
No, and I think the situation might be similar here. I really don't know what the enrollment, for lack of a better term, is for a lot of these parties, but I would say the majority of Canadians are not part of any political party. I mean, I'm not a political expert, but I do follow it pretty closely, and I'm not a member of any party either. I just kind of like watching from the sidelines. So.
Oh, well, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, whenever I hear about podcasts or something, I always consider myself somewhat unqualified to maybe talk about stuff like this. But then during the last election, when I realized how little the Canadian public at large knows about politics, maybe I should start calling myself an expert. There was actually one newscast. It was during the election, and a reporter just pulled someone off the street and said, "Oh, who are you voting for in the election?" And she points behind her, and there was a Green candidate handing out pamphlets. And she said, "Oh, that guy," because she had just talked to him. And the reporter said, "Oh, are you in his riding?" And she went, "Yeah, wait. What does that mean?" So I don't feel quite as ignorant to politics as I used to, knowing how some of that works.
Well, very often ordinary people don't know as much as they should know, I think, but be that as it may. And actually, it is a good point to bring up when we talk about all of these machinations and things going on in parliamentary systems. It is worthwhile pointing out, I think, that there are similar things that go on in the U.S. It's just it's not as obvious. I mean, constitutionally, the U.S. president can do certain things without the consent of Congress. Like, for instance, if Congress is in recess, he can make an appointment, and that appointment will stand until Congress resumes. And generally speaking, once they're in, they're in. But this current regime has used this thing called signing statements. Every time that Bush has signed a bill into law, he's issued a signing statement, which is essentially his interpretation of what the bill means, or what Congress meant sometimes. And very often it's been completely opposite of what the bill says. And he will say, essentially, I don't care what this bill says, I'm not going to obey it, or I'm not going to obey this section, that section, and that section. And the Congress let him get away with that for 8 years. And so anti-democratic and autocratic behavior is not unique to parliamentary systems. It has been happening in the U.S. system for the past 8 years. And I don't know, I just think it's worth pointing that out sometimes, because I think some of my fellow Americans sometimes have a bit of a distorted view of the virtues of the American system. Is that diplomatic enough?
No, it sounds pretty much on par. And again, this is the kind of thing that Stephen Harper is appealing to in the Canadian public, talking about democracy and how a coalition government would be undemocratic somehow. You know, it's one of those things that just on paper doesn't really work out. So all these people that are going to anti-coalition rallies saying that they're on the side of democracy, again, they're kind of citing virtues of democracy that it doesn't really add up. So it's kind of strange.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's about all you can say.
Well, we should touch base again after this is all sorted in the new year and see where all the dust has settled.
Assuming it all gets sorted. We'll see.
There's that. If you don't have the jackbooted troops marching in the streets or something. Talk about anti-democratic. But anyway. Yeah. But I'd like to thank you for joining me today to sort of sort out some of this stuff that's been going on. It's been interesting to me, because I'm obviously interested in government and politics and all those sorts of things, and in what goes on in other Commonwealth countries. But I also, as you know, I've been trying to help my fellow Americans understand a bit more about their neighbor to the north, because I think that's a good thing. Knowledge is good.
Yes.
Why don't you tell the people where they can find you?
Oh, yeah. I'm at Slap Upside the Head at www.slapupsidethehead.com. It's an anti-homophobia blog, so I don't often talk about politics on it unless it's directly related to that, but I would love to have you all as readers, so there.
Yep, and there is a link on my blog, and we'll, of course, put a link in the show notes as well. I haven't yet put links to blogs on my podcast site, amarinspodcast.com, because I was using a service called Blog Rolling for my links, and it was taken offline, essentially. The editing of it was taken offline because they had some sort of attack. I don't really know. And so I'm debating how long I want to wait to get access, or should I just dump it and start over or use a different service? I don't know. Anyway, that's why I don't have any links to blogs on that site, in case anybody is wondering. But there will be a link to the show notes. But that, I think, will wrap up this discussion. But as I said, I would like to touch base with you again once it all is sorted, if we can arrange that. Or if it is sorted.
If it's sorted, sure.
Yeah. But thanks again for joining me.
If it doesn't get sorted and we do end up with a Harper dictatorship, perhaps we can talk about it when I move to New Zealand.
Good idea. Okay, well, thanks for joining me, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarins Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.